This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
You're listening to Goodfellas Minute 3.
I know I'd go from rags to riches if you would only say you care.
Hello, welcome to Goodfellas Minute, the only podcast that analyzes Martin Scorsese's film Goodfellas one glorious minute at a time. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. With me are Josh Flanagan.
Hello.
And Ron Richards.
Are we sure we're the only one? We've got to be the only one. I didn't actually look for that.
So.
Yeah,
haven't checked.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm sure someone else is going to reach out and go, "You're ripping me off."
Yeah, he's a real jerk.
We'll have to have a sit down. So this is minute three. Let's jump right into it. Starts with close up of Henry closing the trunk. We get the voiceover, and we'll get to that in a minute. And then we get some more credits. It ends with East New York in 1955, and our pan over to the taxi stand. So let's jump in. So this is our first instance in the film of voiceover, music, and freeze frame all in one shot.
Wow.
And what a line to start with. This is the seminal quote in the movie. As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Yeah, they use several taglines for the movie, but this is my favorite of them all because that just sums it right up. It just sums it everything up. And the crescendo or the connection of the line followed by the music is just, yes. It's perfection.
Well, the thing is, this one shot encapsulates those three things I said. These are all motifs that are used throughout the film. What's funny is doing this project with you guys is sort of like, we know this movie so well, but now that we're actually having to look at it again for the first time.
Yeah.
And I don't think I realized how often and how much the freeze frame was used.
Oh yeah, we're gonna go through in these first few minutes. You see it used time and time again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
yeah. I think that Scorsese, and to a certain extent his editor Thelma Schumacher are known for melding all those things. And specifically as a director, I don't know that there's anybody better at putting popular music into a movie.
Well, yeah.
I mean, he there's a lot of ways to do it really cheesy. But he's the one who does it well and does it the best, where he's got period music. This is stuff that he, probably grew up listening to at this point, or, at least he was younger when it was playing. Mean Streets was a lot like that, too. He'd sort of started that in there. And the soundtrack is every bit as important to this specific movie as the script.
Yeah,
it's a living part of it. So we're starting off with Rags to Riches, which is pretty on the nose from Tony Bennett, which was written by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross. Tony Bennett and Percy Faith released it in 1953, which tells you where we are. It was number one record for 8 weeks, and it got a gold record.
It's legendary. I mean, Tony Bennett, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I feel like, you know, so often when it comes to music, you know, and the mafia, you hear Frank Sinatra and all stuff like that, but Tony Bennett is right there. I mean, yeah. Tony Bennett, as far as a staple of Italian-American 1950s or whatever, like, he's got the golden voice and all that sort of stuff, and this song is just, it's perfect both contextually as well as, even though this is 1970, this is what, this is our bridge to the flat, to end, you know, to go back right. to in Henry's life, and so this song just pushes us into 1955.
And just from a sonic standpoint, like, it starts with bombast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's on you. You started. You're in it. Just like the movie. The movie started. You're going.
Well, there's something else interesting is that this is the first instance of voiceover, Josh, and you normally really hate voiceover in your storytelling.
You know, that's true. I from going through sort of the beginning of going through, there's a lot of stuff in this that other directors can't do well. We're going to see a lot of moving camera.
Yep.
We're going to hear a lot of voiceover. We're going to hear wall-to-wall music. These are usually crutches, I think, in the hands of lesser filmmakers. But in this, it tends to work. So that's a good point. And we're definitely going to be touching on that a lot. But, you know, Marty makes it work or whatever that special chemistry of it all is. So something that's interesting, do you know where Tony Bennett is from?
No.
Astoria.
He's from Astoria, Queens.
How about that? That's pretty accurate.
Ron, can you tell us how that relates?
Well, let's before we get to the setting, let's get to the bridge, which is the credits. Let's finish that off before we get
to the right.
story. Yeah, yeah.
So here's interesting is up until this point, the credits have all been black and white. And here we have the Goodfellas title in blood red right after the murder in the trunk.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's good. And then we have the principal creatives behind the film are now shown in this portion. We get the writer. Who's the writer, Ron?
Well, yeah. The screenplay was written by Martin Scorsese and the writer Nicholas Pileggi, because this entire story is based off the book that Nicholas Pileggi wrote called Wise Guy.
Wise Guy
released in 1986.
Nope. 1985.
Really?
Yep.
but still, it's not all that long.
Yeah.
For a book to go from, you know. From being pretty successful to being a full on movie.
And the reason why the movie wasn't called Wise Guys, because at the time there was a Wise Guy TV show.
Starring Ken Wall, exactly.
Wall.
Interesting that Nicholas Pileggi, you know, basically, how did he come about doing this? He was a journalist for the Associated Press in the 50s, and he focused on crime reporting. And clearly he was, you know, New York based, because that's where a lot of the major press outlets were. And over the years, he built up, you know, a reputation of being a good crime reporter. And he branched out and he was covering stories for New York Magazine as well as other outlets, and became pretty much an expert on the mafia. And so when this thing that I keep hearing, the mafia, that they say that doesn't exist. So after Henry Hill was arrested and turned informant and the trial happened and all stuff like that, when he was released, he decided to tell his story, and he teamed up with Nicholas Pileggi to tell Nicholas Pileggi his story and have him write it. So mixing of the real life account of Henry Hill by one of the best crime reporters in the country.
And if you haven't read it, it's really,
it's really good.
Yeah. Oh, if you haven't read it, you know, and you like this movie, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah.
I think you definitely have to. Let's also just note for a second that it's a pretty brave thing for Pileggi to write that book.
Sure.
I mean, if there was a mafia and that was a real thing.
But it's not, you know, so he's okay.
Sure, it's not. Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. But, you know, it's a pretty ballsy move, and it was very successful. interestingly, here's a tiny factoid for you. At the time, Nick Pileggi was married to Nora Ephron. Acclaimed screenwriter.
He was until she passed away. He never was.
That's true.
Yeah.
She also wrote My Blue Heaven, which
she
is
directed it too.
Yep.
Which is a
fictional sequel.
Oh, it's not a satire. It's a sequel.
It's a sequel. Yes. It was meant to be a sequel to Goodfellas.
I guess you're right.
Is right.
We'll talk more about My Blue Heaven at the end of this run. But yeah,
have a minute.
That's a good. Exactly.
Anything else?
I don't think I can hang with. It's a little early.
I am down for My Blue Heaven minute. By the way,
all right. Anyone else? Anything else in the credits, or should we move on to the actual story?
Let's move on to the actual story. I think.
All right, so it opens 1955, East New York, which is currently one of the worst crime-ridden neighborhoods in the city, but not shot in East New York. This scene, where we pan over from young Henry looking out his window, spying the cab stand across the street.
Where That's true. It was shot in Astoria, Queens on 32nd Street, just off of 31st Street, which is the main elevated train run that goes up through there, which is the Q and W now, no longer the N, or is it the
Did
which one of them's
it?
Gone?
Oh.
Hmm? Yeah, they changed it.
It
doesn't
oh,
matter.
Okay.
I used to live in this neighborhood, and it was after I moved in that I found out that the locations for this were literally like several blocks from my house. You just walk past here every day. We have promotional photos for iFanboy that we shot in front of the cab stand.
Yes,
looking like a bad like album cover.
It's yeah. awesome.
But
totally
yeah, no, fascinating that if you live in New York City or been there or been to Astoria, you can to this day walk on this street that they in this shot.
There's people who live in Henry Hill's Place. Yep. As you look out down the road on a 24th Avenue, which is where I lived, you can see there's it's a Japanese restaurant now. It was at least very recently. You know, but it's all right there. You could walk up to Henry Hill's apartment and knock on the door.
And they probably sick
probably
of it.
Don't want you to do that.
Yeah,
just down the street is the Costanza's house. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's an important note that part of this was that, you know, like so much of Henry Hill's story took place in the New York metro area. And we're going to try to talk about as much as we can as we do the podcast. But, you know, the combination of Brooklyn and actually some of Manhattan, but not as much as you'd think. Not a lot of Manhattan.
Brooklyn and Queens.
Yeah, and we're going to get into why that was the case later on in the run. But so Scorsese shot on location pretty much for the majority of the whole movie was shot in the New York metro area. I remember I had a friend of mine who grew up in Queens and lived near one of the shooting locations, and he knew that they were shooting, and so he just would walk his dog for hours hoping to bump into it, and he happened to bump into De Niro and Leota just smoking on the street in between shots, and De Niro played with his dog. Oh, that's a nice dog. And so, I mean, like, this was all happening in New York City, you know, in 1989, you know, amongst all the other New Yorkers, you know, not that long after all this happened. So I think
yeah,
it's interesting.
And yeah, and Astoria was a different neighborhood then.
Yeah, and so now we see where Henry lived in. It was shot in Astoria, but it's actually supposed to be in East New York, Brooklyn, which is the Brownsville, East New York section of Brooklyn. The cab company, the cab stand, was in the movie. In the next minute, we'll see it's called the Pitkin Avenue Cab Company. In reality, it was the Euclid Avenue Taxi Cab and Limousine Service, and it was located at 391 Pine Street, which is near Pitkin Avenue. In the Brownsville area of Brooklyn. So that's where it all really happened.
So so we also meet here is Christopher Cerrone, who plays young Henry.
Yes.
And I have a fun fact for you on Christopher Cerrone, who had to wear contacts to match Leota's eye color, but that's not the fun fact. The fun fact
that's a very interesting fact.
Christopher Cerrone did not act again until 2011.
Jesus.
Really?
What did he do?
In a movie called Pathfinders in the Company of Strangers.
Huh. That's not a good title.
No, it's not. But Christopher Cerrone had a bit of a rough time after this movie. Everyone wanted to beat up the kid in the Goodfellas movie.
Oh,
really?
That happened quite a bit.
New York City kid, I assume.
Yeah. So, but the rest of his childhood, a lot of people, a lot of fights. Oh.
You know, this is a slight difference, but like this seems to happen to kids who are in mafia-related stuff. Kid who played AJ Soprano, he got into some trouble. The kid from... Bronx Tale?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cologito?
Oh, yeah. He went to prison, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, he got in a lot of trouble, too. Like, so, you know, kids, moms, don't let your kids be in mob movies is what I'm hearing. That's what I'm getting out of this. About that kid's eyes.
Yeah.
The first shot, sort of, we see the close-up of his eyes. And like, this whole movie, I think, is about Ray Liotta's eyes and his eyelashes. And they found a kid who could pass for, like, a younger version of that, which I think is pretty impressive.
Although, with contacts.
Well, right, yeah, but they still yeah. Like, I thought when I was going through this minute on that close-up, I thought, those look like Leota's eyes. And I realized they weren't.
And yeah. I also like that we only see his face and his eyes as he's talking about, I mean, we're leading into it, but this is him talking about the world that he lives in. So we don't even really see much of him yet in his world. This is more the world that he's around. So, yeah.
Cool. So that's it for this minute, I think. Anybody else got anything to talk about? Or should we move on?
I'm good. Euclid Avenue Taxicab Limousine Service.
All right, so that's it for minute three. Tune in tomorrow for minute four. Until then, you can check us out on Twitter at GoodfellasMin, that's MIN, and on Instagram at GoodfellasMinute. And you can find all of our episodes and all of our feeds and everything at GoodfellasMinute.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh.
Or will I go from rags to riches? my fate is up.